This is Spirit Network Radio, a BBS radio production hosted by renowned clairvoyant medium Francine Milano. Spirit Network is committed to the dawning age of enlightenment, from the psychic to the holistic. If it's on the mind, body, and spirit, it's on Spirit Network.
Hello, and welcome to Spirit Network. I'm your host, Francine Milano, and I look forward to spending the next hour with you. If you have questions or something to share today, please feel free to call into the studio line toll-free at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And today we're going to talk to about a highly unique approach to inner work and healing called Inner Reconciliation Process with the one and only G.P. Walsh. But before I introduce you to G.P., today's show is brought to you by the Ayoshi Oracle Deck. If you've not had your free reading online yet, go to spiritnetwork.com where you'll see a link to your free reading. Problems in relationships, jobs, money issues, simply ask a question, click on the three cards, and your answer will be revealed. Again, you can find that link on spiritnetwork.com. And if you'd like to be a sponsor on Spirit Network, we have many advertising options. Our shows are not just live, but they're also archived on the BBS website, and the podcast is available on iTunes. So your message plays on to reach many people after the broadcast. Simply email radio@spiritnetwork.com. Now let me tell you a little bit about my guest today. G.P. Walsh is a speaker, author, spiritual teacher, energy healer, workshop leader, master coach, master meditation teacher, and a recognized EFT expert. He has been coaching and healing for over 30 years. He's been nicknamed the Irreverent Sage and even called a prophet, a wise man, and a rebel. GP is hailed as an expert on spirituality, energy healing, men's and women's issues, meditation, law of attraction, and many other topics. He is also the host of Law of Attraction 2.0 radio show with over 25,000 listeners, as well as the founder of The Balls Project, a self-help for men. We'll talk more about his classes and services, including inner reconciliation. I, for one, am very interested in learning more about that. Hello, GP. How are you? Thanks so much for being here.
Hello, Francine. It's a real honor to be here. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate you taking your time out from your busy schedule, because I have seen your extensive background, and I think you've been a very busy person.
I'm a busy boy, yeah.
Well, so since we're on that, unless you drinking 7 pots of coffee a day, I don't know, but let's start there. Tell us about your early life and how you came to this mentoring and healing path.
Well, it actually came quite as a natural curiosity. I was very curious about spiritual things even as a very young boy, and I used to really ponder questions like, where do we come from and all that. But I also remember trying to imagine what it would be like to not exist. And I was fascinated. I'm like 4 years old, and I was fascinated at the fact that I couldn't imagine it. Because no matter, wherever I come up with something and there was nothing there, I'd go, yeah, but I'm here, still here looking at it. It really did mesmurize me, the question about just the sheer simplicity of being. And I would occasionally fall into what later I began to recognize as samadhi, which were these periods of just complete and total detachment and peace, complete alertness, complete awakeness, complete functioning, but just it's as if there was like nothing happening, just this complete stillness. And it was very interesting, because it was really quite a stark contrast against my household, which was rather crazy. My mother was a schizophrenic. She was borderline psychotic, very barely functional. And you just really never quite knew who was going to show up in any given time. Mm. She was really aggressive and intrusive on one end. And then, you know, then she'd be neglectful. And, you know, she'd switch sides in the middle of a conversation and not remember that she did it. I mean, it was a chaotic place to live with very little stability. And so I think my natural curiosity combined with just, you know, a desire to alleviate first my own suffering and eventually the suffering of others, it inevitably led to this path. And then just had some really remarkable spiritual experiences as a teenager, which just kind of, you know, this is really cool stuff. I just fell in love with it. I just fell in love with what makes things tick. Who are we? Why are we here? What's the point? And over time, as answers became more clear, it's just that inevitable desire to want to share it. So, and that's really kind of how the whole thing happened. And I just got so curious about it. I just studied whatever I could get my hands on. And I've just learned all sorts of different traditions and, you know, stories and mythologies and practices, everything from Advaita Vedanta to Zen to Christian mysticism. The subject is just so fascinating to me that my knowledge of it, acquiring the knowledge was easy because I loved it.
Were you a loner as a child?
Yes and no. I mean, I did make friends easily. I was a performer. I played music and I did plays and things like that. I had a very extroverted personality, but I was very contemplative. Spend a lot of time alone just thinking about things. So, I wasn't either really one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was also, and I find a lot of people on their spiritual path talk about their early beginnings, and usually it comes from a very quiet childhood or at least a lot of time that they get to spend alone, mm-hmm. you know, and I also had a lot of difficulties and challenges as in my family, and it really kind of caused me to also be that contemplative. What else is there? There has to be more to this, and I felt kind of apart from everybody else. Although I also had a social life, so it was just kind of interesting the way that you described that. And as teenager, what kind of field did you go into to start? I mean, were you a musician?
Oh, yeah. I started playing music when I was five. I had an obvious knack for it. But I was rebellious. I was a hippie. I mean, I didn't play Sousa marches. I was playing rock and roll and blues and jazz.
There's the rebel. Okay.
Yeah. And I fell in love with that too, and I eventually went to school and studied and became a composer. And I still write music. I write music for all of my meditations, for the fun of it. I do music for other people as well. I've done music for radio and TV and that sort of thing. And I still love doing it. It's still very much a part of me. It's just not as important as spiritual teaching. So I just kind of use it as part of the tool. But as a teenager, I just kind of thought what my destiny was. I was destined to be a rock star, right? As was everybody else. I mean, I did have talent for it, and I was disciplined enough to actually study it. Which was amazing because I was stoned most of the time. It was later as I got out of high school, I started really getting serious about it. And, shortly after high school, I had some really amazing experiences that completely transformed my life. And the end result is I ended up really becoming very disciplined and very dedicated to learning the craft of music.
Yeah. So I know that you have a lot of mainstream in your life as far as career paths and things you've done, even voiceovers for TV or radio. Yeah. I know that you've done a lot of that.
I've started businesses. I've done all sorts of things. Yeah.
Entrepreneur. but let's stick to the spiritual side. I mean, Yes. You've had a lot of success in a lot of areas. It's true. But I'd like to talk about this inner reconciliation. If you can tell me what that means, and as well as its subtitle, the end of the self-help treadmill. Can you give us a little bit more on that?
Yeah, I'd love to. And it's a relatively recent term. I've used the term kind of on and off for the last 2 years, but it was actually one of my students, one of my certified facilitators. He said, this is what we should call it. Because I couldn't name it. I was teaching people how to do this, and I was doing it myself, but I didn't really know what to call it. And I was trying to find something cute and clever, but we all just kept referring to it as that, kind of the working title, until finally one of them said, you know what, this is it. This is really good. It really, this is what it's like, and this is what we're doing, and so this is what we should do it. So, okay, so it stuck. And what it refers to is some insights that I've had, and others as well. I mean, this is actually some of the stuff I'm going to say is hinted at by Carl Jung and Helen Sidra-Stone, who did voice dialogue, and some other psychological things that dealt with they're called subpersonalities. I put a much more spiritual spin on it, and the reality is we all have the experience of having conflicting motivations. We all feel, we make a decision in our life, all important ones, and sometimes even unimportant ones, and it's like there's four or five different voices arguing in your head, and mm-hmm. you find yourself kind of spinning, going from one to the other. And the way we try to, first off, it's just a big jumbled mess. We're just feeling these different things, and it's kind of a struggle to actually make a decision. And the way we make a decision is eventually one of those points of view becomes dominant. We hold on to it, and we try to make the rest of them be quiet long enough to do something.
Right.
And that's usually how it goes, especially in important decisions. And they make the important decision, and you'll feel a sense of like second guessing, or did I really do the right thing? You're just kind of checking under all mm-hmm. the rugs to see if you forgot something. And the more I looked at it, and the more experience I got working with energy. Because I, done energy healing using EFT and some other things. The more I began to realize that what we're really dealing with are really very different energies that all have a different agenda, and the chakra system actually. And I've adapted that to explain it. That the way the human system is constructed, It has different aspects of itself, different energies that serve different functions. Like each one of the notes of the scale is very important, right? You couldn't have the scale without it. That's C note is not the same as the D. And if they work together, everything is very harmonious. But if they don't, it becomes a nightmare. And I realized that the same thing applies to ourselves. So within each one of us, no matter what we're doing, there's always going to be a voice that's arguing for safety, for not taking risks, for not changing anything. It's mm-hmm. it's not a bad voice. It's not a wrong voice, although we get really frustrated with it. But one of the most important aspects of the whole human system is to stay safe. You're never going to make that voice be quiet. What you have to do is to reconcile with it, which means you convince that energy that it is actually going to be safe. We also have, I call that energy the tribe, right? We all have the tribe in us, right? It's the rules. It's just the way it's got to be. You don't step out, don't draw outside the lines. And safety is paramount, right? The next energy up the scale I call the nymph. It's just pure, unbridled pleasure and desire. We all have that too. And go up a little bit further, and you get the storyteller, which is this, it's the sense of identity, the ego that's forever spinning stories about itself, and it wants to prove the story and make a great story. And we have the energy of the heart. We have the energy of communication. We have the energy of actually having a vision, a sense of spirituality. All of those are present all at the same time, and it's obvious they have different agendas. That pure energy of desire does not want to be told no.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So what most people do then is they try to suppress one of the energies, right? And most of the energies until they get with one. And most of us have identified with one. Most of us have identified, you know, I was identified with the nymph when I was identified as being a rebel, whereas my brother, who became a very, you know, fundamentalist and very, very conservative, identified with the tribe. That's how we solved it. I began to realize that both of those energies were valuable. Both of them were absolutely critical. Both of them were natural. And my job wasn't to suppress them, but to reconcile them. And so as I began to develop this, I began to literally, when I would bring up something like, you know, a visualization or something, right? And rather trying to hold doggedly to my visualization of this thing that I wanted, I would picture this thing that I would want, and I would literally invite the energy of the nervous system to react to it. And when I felt something that was resistant, I would put all my attention on the resistance, and I would say, why are you resisting this? Tell me what it is that you're afraid of. What are you trying to protect me from? And invariably, I would get an answer. It would come as a feeling. It would come as a thought. It would come as a memory. It would come some childhood trauma. Something would begin to pop up. And so as I began to work with it, using meditation, using a dialogue with it, and also using at times EFT, I would found that eventually that it would let go of its defensive posture because it realized that it was safe, and I felt more freedom. And suddenly, I felt the freedom to move. Let me give you a really good example of this. This was probably about 3 years ago when I was really wanting to do more as a teacher. I wanted to be more out there. I wanted to do some stuff, and I just kept running into walls. Just nothing was working out, and so I had this, kind of sat down with my inner world, and as I was sitting there, just asking why the resistance? What are you trying to protect me from? And I got this image of a Secret Service man, you know, like Smith from The Matrix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was just really stark, and he says, it's not safe. I says, what isn't safe? He says, nothing is safe. I said, well, wouldn't it be okay? No. I mean, he was just absolutely adamant that I just couldn't go any further. And I said, okay, I get it. Your job is to keep me safe, but could you just, like, give me a little bit more room? Like, maybe wait outside instead of sitting here on my lap? And he stood there for a second and goes, okay, but I'm going to be right outside. I said, okay, it's a deal. And the moment he said that, my chest just opened up. My whole body relaxed. And in a couple of weeks, I started a radio show.
Oh, wow.
Now, okay. It may seem kind of weird. You know,
it sounds like you have multiple personality disorder, quite frankly.
Yeah, and I had a schizophrenic mother, so don't trust him. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm thinking she's the model for all this. But I'll tell you what, I'm imagining all these little chakras going wah, 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 wah. Yeah. Just talking to you like you're looking at each chakra because yes. That's how you identified each one. So, and it's the red one we have to really have to put outside.
Well, the red one, which is the, you know, the tribe, the first chakra, the energy, it is nothing but safety.
Yeah, I know.
It is survival. Safety and perpetuity. That's what it's about. And it's powerful and it's relentless. And it's never going to stop until it knows it's safe. So the only way to resolve an inner conflict is to reconcile with that energy to such a degree that it recognizes that it is safe. Therefore, it can let go of its defensive posture, and it can basically go back to just scanning the environment for danger, which is what it was meant to do. See, I know it sounds a little weird, but if you try it, you're going to be really amazed to find it. The thing is that we all think of ourselves as like this perfectly integrated thing, and we're not. You know, there is at the essence of all of us a conscious center. But just like our bodies have different organs that each have a very specific function, the energy of our personality and our human character has exactly the same thing. It's got multiple parts to it. It functions just like your body does. And the reality is that you, as the conscious center, are more than all of that. You're the one actually in the middle of all of this, but we're so identified with them that
we don't take charge a lot of times.
We are not the master in our own house.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so go ahead.
No, it's go ahead. It's all right.
Well, I was feeling like, I guess my obvious question, and the listeners are thinking, okay, so how do you make the sacral chakra or the tribe, how do you make them feel safe?
Right.
How did you get this little guy outside the room?
Well, number one, never threaten their position. We take a posture, especially when you kind of do spiritual work and especially in like self-help work, to try to like push through, overcome your fears, forget about it. As if the safety mechanism was something that was a problem, without that safety mechanism, none of us would have made it, to kindergarten, let alone to adulthood.
Right. So I need to stop yelling at him. Yeah.
So the first thing you need to do is realize that it is a function that is absolutely critical. And if you try to shut it down, it will shut you down, period. Because you then become a threat to survival when you try to do that. So the first thing you do is you recognize that this is a very natural thing. The next thing you have to do is to recognize that these energies got stuck in a position based on experiences that happened long ago. So when you're a kid, a little kid, you are pure expression, right? It's all innocent. It's all natural. There's absolutely nothing artificial or pretentious about it. You're just being yourself. So you just naturally express yourself with that natural exuberance. But the behavior you exude earns the displeasure, maybe even the punishment or even abuse of the tribe, your parents, teachers, and that sort of thing. Because you are in such a vulnerable state, this is pre-verbal, this is pre-reasoning, your nervous system, you aren't capable of taking care of yourself, right? That you haven't developed the consciousness to be able to do that. So the nervous system's doing it for you. So when you run into that punishment, that pain created by the environment that is supposed to be protecting you, your nervous system goes, okay, get it. That behavior doesn't work. It's got to go away. And it immediately begins forming patterns of behavior and responses to make sure that you always present to the tribe the behavior that's going to get you what you need, approval and love and care and shelter and changed and cleaned and all of that. And the behavior that gets you disapproval is going to get pushed away. Now, that behavior that's being sent to the basement could be the very best part of you. And none of it actually goes away. It can only be kept underground so it can't be seen. Now, as that begins to form over time, the system begins to assume, and I call this an energetic assumption, it begins to assume that this is the way things are. So even though 15, 20, 25, 40 years later, you're in a completely different environment, that mechanism doesn't know it yet because nobody told it. It still thinks this behavior is dangerous. I can't let it out. And now as a conscious adult, you're looking for inner resources to help you accomplish things you haven't accomplished before, and you can't get them. You can't get access to it. Because that same mechanism is still at work. So what do? You go directly to the mechanism and you go, what are you protecting me from?
And you don't go into 4 years of therapy?
No. No, I'll make that one a blunt one. No. It's not really necessary because all therapy, and I have an enormous amount of respect for therapists. I've gone through therapy, matter. It's really funny that I go to EFT conferences and energy healing conferences, and it's filled with therapists, right, who are finding ways to make it work better. So, but as long as you're focused your attention on your on the mind only, you're forget it. You're going to lose. The mind is nothing about stories about what's already occurred. I mean, it's just created layers of information to try to explain the actual phenomena. Remember, this stuff happened to you before you could think, before you could even form a word. It was happening the moment you came out of the womb and oftentimes before. As soon as the nervous system develops, this is what it starts doing because it's got to guarantee safety. So you're talking about a picture of the world, of reality that's being held by your energy system that could be very, very primitive. It could have been a trauma that happened while you were still in the womb. And the end result then is it thinks this is what reality actually is. It's a bit like after World War II out in the South Sea Islands, the war between the U.S. and Japan. Because the islands were all spread out so much and we didn't have the mass communication that we do now, there were literally 6 years after the war was over, there were still Japanese soldiers on those islands fighting who didn't know the war was over. It's a perfect image for this. It's still defending you even though it doesn't know the because it doesn't know the danger isn't there anymore. And that's what it's. This is a deeply compassionate practice in reconciliation. It's not self-help. That's why I say it's the end of the self-help treadmill. Because when you do a self-help technique, your intention right from the get-go is to change and fix things, right? Mm-hmm. To make yourself better. You know, this is not a good behavior. You need this behavior. This isn't working for you. This is self-sabotage. You got to get rid of this and do this. That's exactly what happened to us in the first place. That's exactly what our parents did that caused all of this. And so the system's already perfectly defended against all your self-help techniques. They won't work. And so you keep going over and over again, go to a different teacher, read a different book, do a different program, take a different technique. And, you know, there's a little bit of motion, but very rarely does any of that stuff actually have any permanent results.
So do you actually have to go into all of your childhood experiences?
No, that's the beauty of this. When you go directly to the energy itself, right, you go with no agenda whatsoever. I Francine, I used to think I was really smart. Right? I had all this stuff figured out and I could read people and I was empathic. I could sense what they were doing. The more I worked with the energy, the more humbled I became by it. And till now, I don't assume anything. I ask the energy, what do you need? And it tells me. And if it needs to tell the story, it'll tell it. If it doesn't, it won't. It knows the quickest way between where you are and where healing is, because it knows what really happened. Remember, none of this stuff that gets put in place in your system, it's not a joke. It doesn't make this stuff up. Any problem you are facing is there because something really did happen to you.
Yeah, it's real.
It's real.
That, you know, let's talk about what I call it, the blabber, okay, the inner dialogue, the one that doesn't really shut up and weighs and measures everything. And, you know, I mean, that's what you have to really contend with when you go into meditation, when I teach that. Uh-huh. But you know, the inner dialogue that takes place toward like negative thinking, how do you either control that or balance it out? Now, I'm thinking you're going to say you don't control it, but how do you –
Well, you are psychic, right?
I'm just catching on, right? But how do you actually balance that out?
I'm an open book to you.
So there's one part saying, yeah, you can do it, and the other one saying, no, that's not really going to happen.
Well, first thing I do is I just get whatever one is the strongest energy, and I say, okay, great. This is never going to happen. Why is it never going to happen?
Oh.
I treat it with utter respect, and I say, what's your point of view? All of those voices represent a point of view that is real. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, your eye knows nothing of the world of sound.
Mm.
No idea whatsoever. It has no clue. It's completely irrelevant information. That's all it knows. So it's only the world of light and shade and color. That's it. As the ear only knows the world of sound. Light is meaningless to it. And these energies are the same way. That energy of safety only sees the world through the eyes of safety. It doesn't know about pleasure. It doesn't care about pleasure. Doesn't care about success. Doesn't care about happiness. All it cares about is safety. So recognizing that it's a point of view that is completely limited by its perspective, I say, okay, what are you seeing? Why do you feel that way? And every time it will respond. It will tell me something about why it feels that way. And then I can begin to reconcile with it. I can either show it that what it's actually experiencing came from somewhere else, or it can show me why it feels that way, and then I can demonstrate that that's not the case anymore. And it goes, oh, okay. So, you know, when we say negative self-talk, negative voices, notice that in order for that voice to be negative, I have taken an antagonistic position against it. If I don't take that antagonistic position, if I realize that it's not really negative, it's just a point of view, then I'm not stuck in a position that's judging it. The moment I say negative, I'm judging it. I'm looking for the way to get rid of it, and I'm threatening it. And at that moment, it's closed off. I mean, it's just like somebody yelling at you, right? I mean, you're really not interested in negotiating with somebody who's sitting here yelling at you.
So it's really not something you just get rid of. It will always be there, but it's either under the rug and it's just still hindering you, even if you don't see it. Right. I think there's a lot of people that don't want to deal with that. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Because those are our two methods. We try to get rid of it or we try to suppress it. Neither one of those works. We need to liberate it. We need to let it be completely what it is, honor it for what it is, and let it function the way it was meant to function, at which point everything just stabilizes itself. But yeah, I mean, it's truly unfortunate, but in our day and time, we have simply become inundated with this idea that somehow if I'm feeling any discomfort, something's wrong and I got to get rid of the discomfort. We live in a culture that treats symptoms and not causes. And so people become afraid of the difficulty. They become afraid of that sense of discomfort. I've learned now that if there's a discomfort, that's the first place I go. I go right to it. You know, I think of it as like, you know, imagine you're sitting in a park or somewhere and some little kid comes running up to you. They're so afraid, they're shaking, they can't even speak. Would you say, like, go away? You know, fix this. This is wrong. Go to a retreat. Here, read this book. I mean,
right.
You'd pick her up. You'd hold her under your lap. You'd stroke her hair. You'd hold her. You'd hug her. You'd make her feel everything she possibly could to know she was safe. And then eventually she'd calm down. Maybe she'd tell you the story, you know, what happened. And then next thing you know, she's jumped off your lap and she's back playing. That's how I treat the internal energies within us, you know. That energy that got suppressed when you were little, it's just been sitting in the basement, right? And it wants to come out and play, but it has been characterized as this problem, as this negative energy, as this bad thing, because it wasn't acceptable at one time.
Yeah, and we all have parts of us that we don't like. I mean, a lot of us do.
Yeah, that's right. But the only reason you don't like the part is because you have taken a position against it. You have taken a certain position, and this part seems now like it's an enemy, like it's fighting you. Mm-hmm. If you step out of the position and see that they're all equal, they're all useful, they're all natural, they're all part of life, there's no fight anymore.
Wow. I can see where it comes from childhood, though. But what about... What about past lives?
Well, you know, I don't like to teach about past lives like a theology. you know, mm-hmm. reincarnation and all that. It's a fact to me simply because I've experienced it. You know, mm-hmm. I've had the energy when I'm working with people and with myself. I've had the energy lead me to events that were clearly not in this life. And it's the same energy, right? I mean, there's many different levels of energy. There's the energy that it's very immediate, the energy that's just from this life with your child and the chakra system as it is in this life. But there's also another energy underlying this whole thing that goes from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime. Right. And the information, all the information is stored there. The Buddhists call it the repository consciousness. And it is just kind of where energy that it also gets traumatized. And get traumatized so deeply that it can go lifetime, lifetime. Matter of fact, as I was working this thing out of not being able to get to, kept running into walls as I was trying to get more out there as a teacher. Several experiences that I had that were clearly from a past life. They were very real, and they were a trauma that I needed to work, that I needed to go through.
Were you led? Were you led there to that by the inner dialogues?
Yep.
Okay. Wow.
I do see. That's the important thing. I've got no assumptions left. You know, I used to, like I said, I used to think I knew all this stuff. So I don't even have, you know, go looking for a past life. I have no assumption whatsoever. But when the energy comes, I've just come to trust it so much that I'll let it take me wherever it wants to take me. And I've got just no compunction anymore about where it might go.
Well, I have a question for you. I have a lot of them, but actually. Well, let me go on to one. I think that a lot of people have certain memories. There are people that I don't remember much about my childhood, but I remember like, you know, three or four distinct memories. And I always feel that there's a reason why we remember those particular moments, mm-hmm. you know, that there is some key there that we have to pay attention to, mm-hmm. you know, and I had a memory of in the womb, and it was something that I just told my mother, I remember this, but I just don't know where I was. She goes, oh my goodness, that happened. We were 9 months pregnant, you know, and it really was a traumatic event. And it's just one of the few memories that I have that I know these particular events are really the key to go back to. So when you do this, do you just sort of say, okay, I know I need to resolve something, so let's have the dialogue about it?
Yeah, I mean, yes, the first thing I would do is it would simply bring up that memory, and then I would just go into my body and see how it reacts to it. Is there a tension that forms somewhere? Is there some kind of contraction somewhere? Is there a heat? Is there some kind of reaction to that?
So you're looking for physical manifestations then?
Physical, emotional, you know, a fear could come up. I sometimes pictures come up, but very, very often it goes to the body. And I start with the body because it's the thing we most ignore. We just kind of think of this body as this an appendage rather than the elaborately complex energy system it really is. And so I go there. I look for, you know, what are you feeling? And sometimes it can be fear. Sometimes it can be people talking about their feelings, which is really a thought. And I try to push it differently. So the first place I always go is in the body itself. What physical sensations come when I bring this thought to mind? And if it's not completely quiet and peaceful, then there's something there. Then there's a reason that memory has kept popping up. And so your job is to simply ask, okay, this is here. You guys think it's important? You know, it's kind of like, you know, imagine you're a CEO at a company and you've got all your executives sitting around the board, right? Say, okay, this is important. Would anybody like to tell me what's important about this? And invite comment.
You know somebody's going to raise their hand, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're going to go, damn, it's about time you started listening to us.
Aha, I see. Well, now I'm sure that there must be a number of aspects to oneself, but I have a two-part question, and that is, do we all have the same number of aspects, and do we need to know what each one is? Or can we not know some of them?
Yeah, that really is a great question, because there are some of these systems that can become very, very complex. And that's really not important. No, you don't have to know them all. you just need to know the one that's speaking, and it will identify itself. I use the chakra system as a model because it's a model that's simple enough. It's just seven things that you can think about. And actually, you really don't have to worry about the first three because that's where all the problems are. So it's a very simple model, and yet it's a rich enough model that it can explain all sorts of different phenomena. But we've got to remember this is all models, right? The reality is the feeling itself. The direct experience is the reality. Everything else is just a way in which we learn how to work with it. So it isn't about having to understand this in great detail and study it for years. It's more direct. The energy itself is infinitely intelligent. I mean, it's anciently intelligent. This energy has been around forever, okay?
Yeah.
So it knows what it's doing, you know? So we don't have to really figure it out. We can just let it show us. And, I've seen a pattern. When I teach certification to people, I teach to use the chakra system as a clue. It's a map. It's a way of kind of finding your way around the territory. But like any map, it's just a map. It's a representation. It's not the actual territory. As for all of us having the same, the answer is yes. We all basically have the same energy. But, you know, it's like the notes of the scale. There are seven of them, and all scales have the, you know, same seven notes, and all songs have the same seven notes. But boy, can you get a whole bunch of different songs out of those different seven notes. And that's the same with us. We are all in essence one. There's one essence, one substance to absolutely every one of us. And that substance appears in an infinite number of forms, of which you and I are but two.
So let's say you've reconciled something. How do you know? How do you know? What does it feel like? Where's there a release?
Peace.
Peace.
Yeah, there's a quiet. There's an obvious shift in energy that says, wow, I feel relaxed. I feel more calm. My chest is opened up. You can even, you know, if you're using something like, I'll purposely use a trigger, like I mentioned earlier, visualizing something you want, right? I do this one often. Visualize something you want that you don't have, that you really want, that's got some real energy behind it, and hold on to that picture and watch everything react. And I'll keep testing it. When somebody has a particular, they have a feeling of freedom about it, I'll say, okay, go, picture it again. And there may be something else still there in another part. I say, picture it again. I'll keep going until nobody responds anymore, until there's this sense of quiet and stillness that I can own this desire, I can own this picture, and nobody's fighting me about it.
So does this unblock people to achieve goals and succeed more?
Absolutely. It unblocks everything because now all of the energy is focused, right? I mean, it's not the whole thing because we still have to learn how to focus. We have to own our vision. You know, the sixth chakra energy is the energy of the big picture vision. We have to own that. We have to decide what this life is going to mean to us with a deep enough commitment and a deep enough focus that your now liberated energy can begin to migrate towards that. So there is still that step of acquiring a vision for your life. That's still going to be there. But it's just going to, you know, people get very frustrated in trying to realize their dreams and even give up on them because there's so much inner conflict about them that it doesn't even look possible.
But, well, exactly. I mean, old habits die hard. Let's put it that way. So what about addictions? What about weight loss and smoking? Is it something that all of a sudden we just don't have it? It just flies away?
It can. It can also take some willpower, but it can just fly away. Weight loss is a very interesting one because it's always every time I've ever seen it, ever worked with it, it's always been a matter of layers of protection. So the dialogue becomes, what are you protecting me from? Why are we putting on all this weight? Why do I need this? What are you buffering me from?
Right. I ask it every day.
and just really listen to the answer. Really listen very closely. And when you ask the question, when you really ask the question with not a subtle intention to fix it, but with a real willingness to openly listen to whatever it has to say, you will hear something. Now, we're so used to being in our heads and working it out like that, that you might not be able to say, oh, is my mind just doing this, or is this the energy? Believe me, if you ask the question, it will answer. So whatever it is, start working with it. Trust that it's going to lead you. If it's nothing else, it's a breadcrumb. It's going to lead you eventually. And this establishes the relationship of trust with the system, because in the beginning, you don't really know. You know, there's all these feelings. It's a little bit chaotic. And if it's a problem that's been hanging around for a while, you've even developed a sense of identity around it. This is who I am, and I always have this problem, and I always do this thing. Those are all just stories we've made up to try to explain the basic phenomena that
accepted it as our truth.
We've accepted it as our truth, and now we have to explain it, and that's where all the stories come. That's why I call the third chakra the storyteller. It's just always making up stories to try to give some meaning to our life, when in fact the actual events that are disturbing us don't have a story around them at all. They were a pure, raw, natural response to the environment that said, I got to protect myself.
Creative little bugger, that third chakra.
Oh, my goodness. It is so brilliant. And it's fun as long as you know it's a story. If you don't know it's a story, it is pure suffering.
Mm-hmm. And then it will become fully empowered for real.
Well, then it becomes what we call the ego. Mm-hmm. That's the ego. When you believe that to be the truth, it gets you stuck in a position. And once you become stuck in a position, you can't move. And once you're in that position, all other positions start looking bad and ugly and negative. And that's basically how we disown ourselves.
So this brings me to some information that we need to give the listeners. Inner reconciliation is actually offered through the Master Heart Institute. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So tell me how this is done. Is this live? Is it online? How is it available for delivery?
Well, the Master Heart Institute is a recent creation, too. I've just been doing this spontaneously all the time, and I've actually got certified facilitators. So you can get a private one-on-one session. There's like four facilitators plus myself to actually work through some things one-on-one with people. If you go to masterheartinstitute.com, it's a work in progress. We're just completely revising the whole thing now and setting up the courses. But I give live classes online. I also have, I've got the one on the chakra, which is just about ready to be put out as an audio course. I have my Just Allow It course, which really actually teaches you this process of simply listening to the body. Without fighting it. It's kind of the preliminary. You start with allowing, and then you can move into actually working with the energy. You know, once the energy is trusting you and it's free to do what it wants to do, it's more than willing to do what you ask it to do. It's more than willing to bend and make goals happen and things like that, as long as you just don't defy its nature. So there's Just Allow It. There's the chakra effect. There's the evolving into the harmonious human. Those are all live classes. Harmonious human is going on right now. And I'll be starting another one of those coming up probably in September. And also in September, hopefully in September, we're going to launch a class and a forum exclusively for women. I finally found a mature, it's one of my certified facilitators to kind of lead a woman's group in a forum, just like we did for men, and it's been very successful.
And that was the Balls Project?
That's the Balls Project, yes.
I love that. I don't even want to know what the women's group's going to be called.
No, actually, at this point, we're going to be calling it the Athena Connection. It's a very different vibe for women. You know, for men, you just kind of get in their face. It's a different way of teaching. It's a different way of learning. And I didn't want to, you know, Evan, who's my senior facilitator, myself, will be involved in the group, but I didn't want to be exclusively led by a man. I wanted a strong woman as well, and I found that in Christine. She's going to be leading it. We're going to hope to launch that with an online forum. so you can have regular interaction with everybody that's interested in this, just like we do on the
Tell us a little bit about the, not the online forum, but the support, the self-help. I don't want to call it self-help, but for the men's group and the women's group, what is the focus of it?
Well, what we do is in the class, what we do, it's a class about inner work, but we use that which is most important to us, you know, commitment or relationships or sex or money, looking good, whatever it is that means something to you, we take that and explore it to find out what's really going on. What's the fear that makes you do things? What's the real deep inner motivation? And that's where we start getting into the inner reconciliation.
Oh boy.
We find the real energy that's motivating all these things. And that's where the freedom takes place.
I think you need it, GP. I think you need a class called Naked and Afraid.
You know, that's beautiful. I'll add that to the list. We have so many things. Well, Christine is really good, and I have several, you know, women that are involved with that with the Institute, because you know I'm a guy. We're not triggered by the same things that.
Right.
Women are. So right. I needed to have women. And we got, I mean, we're the youngest girl in the Institute had just turned 20. You know, I've got up into their 50s. So we got a really wide range of people telling us what's important to them. And that's what we want to go to, which is why Evan and I didn't, you know, me as a guy, didn't want to just kind of do this whole thing myself. Certain things, I just don't have a clue. You know, and I would be presumptuous of me to think that I do. So that's the whole point. Because, you know, for all of us, you know, we've got the things that we're seeking, the things that have disappointed us. For men, they're different than they are from women. But at the root of those is a disturbance. There's a disruption. There's a trauma. There's a pain. There's a quiet suffering that needs to be liberated. And when it is, it bubbles all the way up the rest of the chain. Your conscious behavior change, your interactions change, your everything about you changes. And the universe, of course, starts responding in kind. It's not artificially trying to raise your vibration for the law of attraction. Your vibration literally goes up because that which was restricting it has been removed. And so that's what we wanted to do. We did it once for men. It was very successful, and we decided that it was time to do it for women as well.
And you have a lot of these things, sir. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Everything's happening in September, right?
Well, September, a lot of things are going to be starting, yeah, because we're putting in a whole new customer relationship management system and everything.
And you were going to add another. What else is going on?
Yes. The other thing is that I've developed the Inter-Reconciliation Certified Facilitator Program. So I'm actually going to be teaching, as well as I've got some senior teachers now. I want to teach people how to do this. My eye on those who would really want to do it professionally, those who are already professional, I want to add to it. And I mean, that's my main eye. This is teaching for people who think, I've got plenty of class with the chakra effect. You'll learn how to do it for yourself. This program is going to be how to do it for others, how to do this as a professional. And further down the line, as that develops, I've got some people lined up to teach classes on how to make a business out of it, you know, how to, you know, all the stuff, how to put the website together, how to market, how to do all the things that make it a profession and not just. You know, at this
That's
point of my life,
to me. I definitely would like to look at that.
Cool. I'd love to love to have it, especially with somebody with your gifts, because it really is just a shift in perspective. You know, we use all sorts of different things. I've used the Sedona Method and Release Technique. I've used Voice Dialogue. I've used Big Mind. I use meditation. I've used Zen practices. I've used Non-Dual Inquiry, Direct Path, The Headless Way. Oh. I use anything because it's not about the technique.
Right.
It's about that relationship between you and this inner world. And Francine, the bottom line is really simple. It's unconditional love. That's it.
Well,
that's all this is.
And you know what? And you've been working on it for so long that it comes right back to the beginning of the reading where you're really, really, really busy. So real quick, because we kind of come to a close.
Okay.
I would like to have you give all your contact information.
Okay. Very good.
Go ahead.
You can reach me at gpwalsh.com. And actually, you can download an ebook there called Angels in the Basement, where I talk about this energy that's been, that has been.
Is that what that was about? Okay, I'm going back there.
Yeah, that's what that was about. Also, the masterheartinstitute.com, which is where you can find the classes. We've just created the innerreconciliation.com to go into detail about the whole process. There's another ebook you can download, which is my how I teach the chakras. It's called The Chakra Effect, and you can download an ebook called, it's a big one, it's like a 50-page ebook, and it's free, called The Chakra Effect, where you can my approach to the chakras. So that gpwalsh.com, masterheartinstitute.com, innerreconciliation.com, thechakraeffect.com.
And if you don't have a pen, you can just always get to spiritnetwork.com and I'll give you all that information too.
And gpwalsh.com is really easy, and it'll connect you to every place else. Or just go see Francine. She keeps track of it.
Listen, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I'm so excited about the program and all the things you have coming up, and I will definitely be in touch.
Great.
And all right, well, we'll talk to you soon.
Wonderful. Thank you, Francine.
Okay, DP. Thank you. Bye. Yeah.
You've been listening to Spirit Network Radio. For more information about the show, please visit spiritnetwork.com. For more information about your host, psychic medium Francine Milano, visit her website at francinemilano.com. Until next time, remember that peace begins with an open heart.